The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Does your vision for business match what you see happening on a daily basis? Welcome to Jim White's Circle of Success, where Jim White brings it all together. For over 30 years, Jim White has worked with organizations and individuals worldwide to help develop and implement excellence. You'll get the inside story on how to create innovative leaders from one corner of your company to the other. Get everyone on your team contributing to the bottom line. Keep building revenue even when the economy and your customers have flatlined, and more. Jim White's Circle of Success Radio covers it all, from communication to contract negotiation, from personal fulfillment to revving up cash flow. It's not about theories. It's about showing you what works and how to make it work for you. And now, here's your host, Jim White.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Saturday, believe it or not, December the 10th, 2011. We have a fantastic show scheduled for you today, but this is live radio, as you well know. And our guest, we saw that they were connected to the switchboard for a bit, and we lost them. So my engineer is trying to reconnect to our guest. And if you are listening, please go ahead and come back into the switchboard. But I do have my engineers trying to make contact now. Now, like I said, this is live radio, so the show goes on. And hopefully we can make connection with this great guest. I've been looking forward to this interview for some time, a long time. And let me give you a little history. And like I said, in case we cannot get reconnected, I'm going to continue to frame the show today and what I believe is a very, very important show. And it's part of our continuing effort to bring awareness to homeland security, bring awareness to border control, immigration, drug control, and those type of things, and just another twist and way to just allow our listeners, both in the U.S. and around the world, to understand exactly the importance. And live television radio does work. So I see that our guest is reconnected. Good morning, Captain.
Hey, good morning, Jim. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. I was just telling our guest, this is live radio. My engineer saw you connect earlier. We don't know what happened, but here you are. And we're so glad to have you on the show today.
Well, I appreciate allowing me to participate in your show this morning.
I tell you, our mutual, what I'm going to call our friend, Heather Isseron, visited you, several weeks ago?
Yes, she did. Yeah, it was a pleasure seeing her and having her come up here.
I tell you, and she got back, and we were having coffee, and she says, Jim, you've got to have this guy, quote, on the show. It is fantastic what they're doing. Did you know that Russia and Alaska is only this far apart? So, boy, I said, man, it's get him on the show and just talk about the 17th Guard District. And you have such an impressive resume. It would take the entire show to read it all.
Well, you're being awfully kind there, and so is Heather, so I appreciate that. But things are very exciting up here, up in Alaska, for the Coast Guard and also for the nation, for the U.S. as a whole. As you mentioned, Russia is just 50 miles away across the Bering Strait, and there's a lot of things that are happening up in the Arctic, and I look forward to sharing some of those things and some of my thoughts.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting when Heather and I were talking and she was just sharing, you know, the distance. And I think for most Americans, and I think for most people around the world, we tend to forget the geographic importance of Alaska as it relates to the bordering countries. I mean, it's right there, and it's a real challenge to secure those borders, is it not, Captain?
I guess it is. Alaska is very large. We have 44,000 miles of coastline.
Wow.
The lower 48, there's only 33,000 miles of coastline. So you can see we have a large coastline because that encompasses the Aleutian Chain, which runs out to the Bering Sea. And Alaska is a huge state. I mean, when you go from end to end, it basically stretches across the continental United States. So it's quite immense, and we border two countries, Canada and Russia. They're very good partners with us, collaboration on various issues like search and rescue, oil spill response type things. We work very closely with them, and also partnering with them to help secure our respective borders.
You know, to the south, I mean, there's no secret. I mean, we seem to get a lot of press, you know, the 2,000-mile border and et cetera in the south of the country. But there's not a whole lot that I'm aware of, or even in the press, has talked about border issues. Do we have issues from the north side coming in for as drug trafficking and those type of things? I mean, what do we see coming from the north side? Anything?
Well, on the north side, you don't see the same kind of quantity of drugs that you see in the as you see in the southwest border. But there is some marijuana. There is some small drugs that do move up. Part of it is probably through some of the land borders and even part of the maritime borders, but it's very small quantities. Most of it's personal use type quantities. But I'm not going to say that there is not any there. We work very closely with the state of Alaska, the state troopers, and also our other federal partners to, like I said, to secure that and to try to stop any kind of flow of contraband, illegal contraband that's coming through our borders up through Canada. A lot of issues that we also work with up here is protecting our economic exclusive zone, our fisheries. The Bering Sea is for the U.S., it's the number one landing port in the nation. It's valued at over $1.5 billion, probably closer to $2 billion industry, the fisheries up in Alaska. And we do a lot to protect our borders to make sure that we do not have any foreign fishing vessel encroachment taking U.S. fish out of U.S. waters. So we spend a lot of effort protecting that part of our sovereignty and that part of our economy.
Is Alaska, January the 3rd, and every time I look at these numbers, 1959 came a state. And the correlation I made there is the I'm a huge space 1958 and Russia put up Sputnik and then the thing for NASA and then we ended up Alaska coming in as our 49th state to 1959 and the history there. I'm just fascinated by the history and the natural resources and everything that's in Alaska. But once again, I think it's one of those particular states that not even our own people know a whole lot about. Would you agree or with that?
Oh, I do agree with that. I mean, I'm very fond of the state of Alaska. This is my second tour up here. I asked to come up here both times. It's such a wonderful, beautiful state. It's very majestic in its grandeur and everything. And I encourage all Americans at least once in their lifetime, if they want to see Mother Nature at its grandest, they need to come to Alaska.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful, but it's also a harsh climate area too. I mean, right now, I think we were having close to just 6 hours of daylight where I'm at in Juneau, Alaska, up in Barrow. It's dark until probably in mid February before they start seeing some sunlight. So it can be a little harsh environment, but the folks here are just fantastic folks up in Alaska. The Alaskans, they're hardy, they're very resilient. And like I said, it's such a big community here. Even though it's a large state, it's basically a small town atmosphere. It's very much community orientated. But with that, the natural resources that this state supplies for our nation is just immense. As I talked about fisheries, it's number one landing fisheries for the United States. Like I said, $2 billion industry on that aspect of it. Oil and gas production. As you know, on the early 70s with the Trans-Alaska pipeline system that one, that comes out of Valdez supplies oil, as well as up to 12% of the nation's oil is coming from Alaska.
Yeah, and I actually worked in that area at that time in the 70s, excuse me. I was with a company called Ingersoll Rand, so I was had an opportunity to come in and out on the pipeline during the 70s when that was being constructed. So I do have firsthand experience of the area, and it is harsh, but it is beautiful.
Yes, it is. And then, you know, and then minerals. Like zinc. Alaska has the world's largest and richest zinc mine up here. Coal is coming out. I mean, there's so much minerals that are also being extracted out of Alaska, and timber, renewable resources such as timber, too. So those are just some of the things. And now we also have possible offshore exploration, too, of oil and gas.
How about a little history lesson for our listeners? And just to give you an idea, we normally have about 500,000 people tuning in to the show, either live or replay, and we have a huge audience, and I'm thankful for it, not only in the United States, but in India and Brazil, and so it's they love the show because probably not necessarily me, but they love the wonderful guests such as you to being able to share information, and they can hear the passion with all of my guests, and they just love it. So the Coast Guard, I think this could be an accurate statement, is probably the most misunderstood agency in the U.S. Am I stretching it to say that?
Well, I don't want to say misunderstood. We like to quietly do our duties for America. And we kind of just let our deeds do our speaking for us. I mean, it's a workforce of just 49,000 full-time employees, and that includes about 41,000 active duty members and just short of 8,000 civilian employees. But we also have some part-time reservists, close to 8,000 reservists, and then we have a volunteer workforce of 33,000 auxiliaries that also help us out.
Yeah, I saw that. Boy, so that's about 70, 80,000 people involved in your efforts.
Yes, and I can go over some of the statistics. I will have to say, you know, I'm very proud of the Coast Guard. I will, like I said, I'm very passionate about what we do. I mean, we protect those that are on the sea. We protect the nation from threats delivered by the sea, and we protect the sea itself. And those are very broad terms, but that basically is our essence. I mean, we're locally based, we're nationally deployed, and we're globally connected. And what I mean by that is our forces are scattered throughout the entire United States. We're embedded within the communities. Our bases, our cutters are part of the various communities that we serve. We're nationally deployed. We're all over the nation. And in fact, we're actually deployed throughout the globe. We have forces in the Arabian Gulf right now, helping with Iraqi freedom, securing their oil platforms there, with the Department of Defense, because that's fueling about 95% of Iraqi's gross national product is coming from those oil platforms. And we also train other maritime nations on how to protect their fisheries, marine transportation system. Last year, we engaged in 51 countries nationwide, and also looking at their compliance standards with international codes and things like that. But we also, just last year, saved over 22,000, we saved 4,300 lives responding to 22,000 search and rescue cases.
22,000 search and rescue.
Yes.
Wow.
Like I said, saving 4,300 lives and property valued at over $84 million. We responded to 36,000 pollution incidents.
Wow.
We conducted over 11,000 inspections on vessels, 9,000 safety of life at sea, what we call port state control safety and environmental exams on foreign vessels that are visiting our ports to make sure they're in compliance with U.S. standards to operate safely in our waters.
Right.
Working with various states throughout the nation, we conducted over 1.5 million recreational boating safety boardings.
Right. I'm going to go back to the word that I use, misunderstood, and I want to clarify my comment on that. Where I was going with that was, it's an agency, as you say, goes about its business, and it's kind of this military, not military. And could you talk about that a little bit, and especially post 9/11, because now the Coast Guard is part of the Homeland Defense. Could you share a little legal structure there and the broad powers that the Coast Guard has?
Yes. Well, we are a military multi-mission service organization. We are a military organization. But we do have broad authorities because under Title 10 of the U.S. Code, we also have law enforcement authorities, and we have very broad authorities on that. So we have what we call Title 10 authorities where we can work with the Department of Defense. And like I said, in Title 14 authorities, law enforcement authorities. But we are, first and foremost, a military organization, and we are a multi-mission organization. And what I mean by that is our forces, our platforms are trained to do many missions. So when our cutters deploy, they can go out there and do a search and rescue mission, and then they can shift hats real quick and go into a law enforcement mission if they feel that there's a threat. Drugs or illegal migrants trying to come in, or to make sure our fishery is being enforced properly. And if there is a national defense threat, they can shift hats and go into that mode, partnering up with our defense partners, Department of Defense, our Navy, Armed Forces, and they can all do this in and out on any given patrol. So that's what makes us very unique, and it is has to do with those legal authorities that Congress has vested to us, and we are very. We're very sensitive to making sure we do not abuse all those powers and those authorities that have been vested into us. And that has gone throughout our whole history.
That was going to be a follow-up question there, but it was, is these powers, has that always been the case with the Coast Guard since is 1700s or 1790, whenever you guys came into existence? Has it always been that broad of a power base?
Yes, it has. I mean, 1790 is our founding. Alexander Hamilton is the Secretary of Treasury, and he realized as our nation was a fledgling nation and we were growing that we had to protect our commerce. We also had to ensure that we collected a proper tariff and our taxes from goods, because at that point in time there was a lot of pirateers. Smuggling was prevalent. With the British colonies, so as we became a new nation, we had to make sure we can collect the right taxes to secure the nation and also protect the nation in and of itself. The Coast Guard has fought in every major war that the nation has been involved in. And these broad authorities, like I said, were given to us at the first part of Congress, at the early Congress, and over the years, other agencies have folded in with the Coast Guard, and those authorities have come with us.
Fascinating. I just find this absolutely fascinating. And one thing as you were talking jumped out at me, and probably not the first time you've ever heard this, but there was a great movie. You know where I'm going with this, The Guardian with Kevin Costner, right?
Yes. Please go ahead, Jim.
No, I was going to say, I bet you that helped recruiting, didn't it? That was a wonderful film.
Oh, yes, it did. and that's still, I think, a favorite among all Coast Guard's men and women is that movie, as well as some of the recent shows that have now been coming up on television about Alaska's Coast Guard. So I think the nation has an affection for their U.S. Coast Guard. It is, I mean, that role there really highlights our rescue swimmers.
Yeah.
These brave young men and women that are flying out above the seas to save lives, and it seems like nobody gets in trouble on a nice day, so it's always rough up here in Alaska. It's amazing where the desk I sit in every morning I see search and rescue cases that our brave men and women are doing on a daily basis, and I'm just in awe of what they can do. And that movie is a good depiction of a lot of what they do, jumping out of the aircraft in stormy seas and pulling off mariners that are in distress. And it's just very awe-inspiring and humbling to know what these brave men and women do for their country.
Boy, I couldn't agree with you more. It's interesting you talk about the that TV show. And one of my producers preparing for the show, he brought that to my attention. So you know what I did last night? I watched one of those episodes.
Yeah, and it's very
it's
exhilarating
great.
And inspiring. It makes you proud.
I tell you, I was sitting there saying, yeah, I'm going to talk to this to one of their representatives tomorrow. And it's great. And we need that, in my opinion, for the country. We need stuff to be proud of. And
Yes. And when you're around these young men and women, you just get a sense of awe, and you do feel proud that being part of the United States, they just want to serve their country. They don't ask for anything. It's humanitarian service. A large part of our creed is being a humanitarian service, and they just want to be out there and help their country and their citizens and protect all mariners that are around the water.
Yeah, I love that, and it's I often think with all the work and our radio and our television and our consulting practice we have, and I'm always looking for the behavioral aspect. What makes an individual to make a choice to do whatever he or she chooses to do? What I call their purpose in life, right? I believe everybody has that unique purpose, and I don't think that's more exemplified in the women and men that are in the Coast Guard and other agencies, especially in this time when it's all volunteer.
Yes, it's an all-volunteer force. We're considered America's maritime first responders. That's
right.
What our men and women are trained to do, to be able to respond to incidents out there in all kinds of hazards. Like I said, stormy seas, or if there's major oil spills like we saw in the Gulf of Mexico last year. Major other incidents, groundings. And also defending our country. I mean, defending our homeland is a large part of what we do. That's why we're in the Department of Homeland Security, is to help secure our borders from any kind of threat that could be emanating from the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And these folks, like I said, we protect America's prosperity, our maritime safety and security. We're part of the fabric of our maritime communities. Like I said, we are the homeland security on the maritime force.
Hmm. We've got to get a quick break in here. We've got to pay the bills. And
I understand.
So we've got to get a quick break. And we come back, if we could, I'd like to kind of drill down of the Homeland Security and some things that you've seen post 9/11, if you will, the changes been made there. Because this Homeland Security thing is I think, I mean, it's become this huge organization, and working with the people at Naval Postgraduate School, Heather, and the Center for Homeland Defense and Security is just fascinating. That's an opportunity to just continue to bring awareness to the American citizens that, yeah, it takes money in order to be able to protect us. So that makes sense? Can we talk about that a little bit after the break?
Yes, Jim. Look forward to it.
Okay, we'll be back in 45 seconds. Stand by.
This segment is brought to you by Circle of Success, a dynamic, year-long intensive management and leadership development process designed to help individuals and organizations reach their goals quickly. A customized process addressing specific needs and identifying the critical opportunities particular to the individual and organization, with results measured in increased revenue, increased net profits, and increased equity. The Circle of Success, inspiring excellence in people. At jlwhiteinternational.com/circles.
We are back with Captain Custard. Captain Custard is Chief of Staff of the 17th Guard District in Alaska. And, buddy, I'm going to say, I love your passion. I just want to let you know, I love it. Just love it. It just shows, and it's great. Well, we are probably not the first radio talk show person you've heard to say this. So we as the United States, we have some great opportunities. That's the way I look at it. And some of these opportunities is putting people to work and to making sure that our borders are secure, as we've been talking about. And this agency that came together post 9/11, Homeland Security, most people don't realize that, I mean, there was a whole bunch of different agencies that came under this one. This could be a year show, but could you kind of, what is Homeland Security? What's involved in it? I mean, what's their powers? What are they here to do as from your perspective?
Well, the Department of Homeland Security, when it was founded, was founded by 22 agencies came together to create the Department of Homeland Security. And it has been maturing since then. And I'll have to say, you know, the broad sense of thing, we're here to help secure our maritime borders, but also secure all our various intermodal system, transportation system, our trades, you know, specifically for the Coast Guard, our marine, our maritime transportation system. 90% of global trade moves by the sea, which fuels, you know, millions of jobs and industries. And in the U.S., 78% of all U.S. international trade is by the sea, and 66% of U.S. crude oil is transported by the sea. So you can see the enormity of for the Coast Guard working with the Department of Homeland Security to ensure that transportation system remains safe and secure.
Yeah,
I can say when the department was created, a lot of it was to create unity of effort across all the agencies, because we all have various authorities, but we want to make sure that our authorities will complement each other and will work with each other. Mm-hmm. And I will have to say, I think it's been a great success, the Department of Homeland Security, because these agencies that did come together, the various agencies, Customs Border Patrol, INS, and a host of others, we are all working well together. We have joint command centers at our various ports, so that we share our information. And it's just not within the Department of Homeland Security. We also work with the other agencies, such as the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
We also work very closely with our state partners, too, state and local agencies. So when you go to a major port, L.A., New York, and a lot of other major ports, when you go into these command centers, you're going to see that it's just not a Coast Guard uniform in there. You're going to see a lot of other uniforms in there. Or agencies that are there. And in some command centers, they might not house everybody there, but they are connected with each other through partnerships. One of the things that really came out of the aftermath of 9/11, besides this unity of effort across the federal agencies, is this partnership with the local agencies and with industry. We have a lot of, for the Coast Guard, we do a lot of port committees, port security committees, routine. These are standing committees that are comprised of all port partners, which is the federal families, the appropriate agencies, and the federal, the state, the local, and industry. And they all work together on, okay, how can we ensure our systems are protected, whether it's the intermodal system, the marine transportation system, our networking system, our IT systems. How do we protect all this so everything moves safely and freely, and how are our citizens protected? So also threats that these systems, our intermodal systems, our transportation systems, are not exploited to transport terrorists or other trans criminals, other crimes or anything else, or to bring in equipment or weapons that could be used against our nation.
And that's where, you know, we had mentioned Heather Isseron that's been in part of the Center of Homeland Defense and Security. And that's one of the great things that, when again, I think the best kept secrets is what that agency is doing. And it's just doing all the things you're talking about, bringing
you know, getting states and private industry and other people to talk and share information. And I mean, everybody involved in this security thing are individuals, and as such, we got unique DNA, and sometimes we come very possessive of our own stuff, right? So.
Oh, yes. I mean, I was fortunate to be able to go through that program at the Center for Homeland Defense and Security at the Naval Postgraduate School at the Executive Leaders Program with Heather and the staff. And I will have to say that was a very enlightening program, and it is one of those little best-kept secrets. I know I've been spreading the word throughout my community in the Coast Guard to go there because it was, one, it was very enlightening. It was very heartening. I mean, I just loved the passion everybody was bringing to it from their various agency. But it was a great point to bring in all these folks from various agencies together, and as we mentioned, also at the state and local level. So I'm very familiar with the federal and the Coast Guard side of the house, but I was amazed in how much I learned from my fellow cohorts, the fire police chiefs, regular state police chiefs, industry, security people from various major corporations were also there, and the dialogue. And I can tell you, everybody had the same passion about we're here as public service to serve America.
Yeah.
Some were serving it within their local community. Some were more at the state level. And at the national level, but every one of them was committed to serving their fellow citizens of the United States, and that passion to be able to go in that room and to hear the dialogue. And these are first responders, these were security officials, and the cross-pollinization and the sharing of ideas and the unity of effort was amazing. And then they go back out, and they're taking that passion, what they've learned in their various agencies, and it's getting all pulled together.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I recently had on a show several of the graduates from the center. And so we've been doing this series over the past few months just trying to bring awareness to the not only American people around the globe that, hey, we're doing some pretty good stuff here and our heart's in the right place. we believe everybody has a right to a quality of life that they choose, but don't go around infringing on other people's rights, if you will. And this is the message. And we've started a series on the Constitution and Declaration, so you kind of get a flavor of what we're doing here. And it's really coming to life. And one of the graduates, he's an inspector at the New York Police Department, Amin Kassin. I don't know if he was in any of your things you do, but reason I bring it up, Amin is one of the highest ranking folks in the New York Police Department from the Persia region, and he's put together this program with the chief of police in New York, support of Mayor Bloomberg, where they went into the Muslim communities.
Yes.
And he put together these cricket and actually in the development and the change that's making for these young men and women. And that's just some of the things that's coming out of this center. And like you said, that cross-pollinization, it just gives me chills when he was sharing that information on the show.
Yes, I think that's great. I mean, a lot of agencies are doing is just outreach efforts into the community. The safety and security of our nation is it requires everybody, all citizens, to help out with that. It's just not the sole responsibility of individual nations, but it's all of Americans are asked to assist with that. And a lot of that is just outreach, working in dialogue with each other, because as you just mentioned earlier, there is a delicate balance with security and our liberties.
Right.
We very much, as Americans, cherish our liberties. But with security, there is that balance. I mean, we can be very secure by taking away a lot of liberties and telling people where they have to go, when they have to go, and how they have to do it. But that's not America, and that's not what we want whatsoever. So it's working with the communities. It's finding that balance, and it's having that proactive dialogue. And all Americans cherish what's in our Constitution, what our forefathers penned. We want to have a very prosperous life. Liberty, we cherish that, what's in our Constitution, our free speech, our practice of our religions, the whole host of things, and we want to pursue happiness.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I know your agency, you do huge outreach as well.
Yes, we do. I'll use just the state of Alaska as an example.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For the state of Alaska, there's a large Alaska Native population up here, the indigenous individuals. There's 229 federally recognized tribes up in Alaska out of the 565 throughout the nation. The Coast Guard very much works well with the Alaska Natives. We make a concerted effort to have a proactive outreach program with them because they have the traditional knowledge we do not necessarily have about living and working up here in Alaska. They want to protect their culture. We respect that, and we want to help protect that culture as industry expands throughout the state of Alaska. We want to hear their concerns, and we cannot do our job without their support. And a lot of it is they know the lay of the land. They know the country. They know the environment.
Right.
And they can help us. And it's a great partnership. We were able to create a full-time tribal liaison officer up in Alaska to help facilitate so we understand their various cultures.
I think that's great. You know, I am, and Bear Whipple, we got some emails coming in and questions for you from the public.
Yes, please.
And just take a few if you don't mind.
Oh, be happy to.
One of them is from, he says, I'm an 18-year-old, and I have a desire for the Coast Guard Academy. How do I proceed?
Well, they should be able to go to a recruiting command to get some information, but also another way to do it is to actually go to a Coast Guard command mm-hmm. and ask to speak to one of the officers there. And that officer will be able to help that young individual to be able to get the information about the Coast Guard Academy. A lot of information can be found on the website.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend going to the Coast Guard Academy website just to get some initial preliminary information about how to get into the Coast Guard. It is a competitive. It is not a congressional, so it's purely competitive. But I would also reach out to a Coast Guard facility, an air station, a Coast Guard cutter, a large district office, and ask to speak to a Coast Guard officer about that individual's interest in getting into the Coast Guard Academy. Okay. And that person will be able to help them get the right information, put them into the contact. And that puts a face to them.
That's good. And as you were talking, buddy, it was in a print here. Is it a congressional like the Naval or West Point? And you answer that it is not. It is a competitive process.
It's purely a competitive process, just like other major universities.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
And it's a fantastic institution, the Coast Guard Academy.
Yeah. Thank you, and thank you for the email. We have another one, if you don't mind taking another one.
Oh, please.
What is the budget, and how is the money spent? I'm just reading the emails, buddy. Good question, though. Good question. But it's kind of a challenging question a bit. But anyway, we'll throw it out there.
Our budget right now is just over $10 billion is what our current budget is.
Uh-huh.
The exact apportionment, I can't quite give you the percentage. A large part of it goes and pays the salaries of all the 49,000 employees. But the operational side of the house, the operational budget, our priorities is about sustained mission excellence for our operations, to keep our units operating, our planes, our boats, our cutters, It's also to recapitalize and build our capacities. Many of our ships are getting old, over 40 years old, so we are invested in new cutters, our large national security cutters. We have our fast response cutters that we're building, new aircraft, our Marine Patrol aircraft, and our some new small boats, some high-tech small boats, our response boats, mediums, and then new sensor capabilities to help us. We're search and rescue cases with border security, communications and networking, so a lot of it is going to that. It's also going to enhance our crisis response and management, how we respond to incidents. As I mentioned, we're America's maritime first responders, so we're investing a lot in that, in teaching our workforce and maintaining their competencies so that they are not just competent, but they are quite proficient in how they execute their missions. And we're preparing for the future. We're building up, like I said, our families, our military families, ensuring they're well cared for with housing, childcare, work life, and looking to the future, such as Arctic. So that's where a lot of the budget is going.
Good. Thank you. A couple of more, if you don't mind. We have a inquiry, and it's making reference to your Title 14. And the question is that the authority when you were talking about we had Coast Guard men and women, say, in Iraq or on the platforms? So what's the authority that they're operating?
The ones that are operating over in Iraq, they're supporting the Department of Defense, so they're working under Title 10 authority over there. Domestically, we mainly, when we're working domestically, we're usually under Title 14 authorities. When we're doing our ports, coastal waterways security, when we're doing our law enforcement boardings, that's under our Title 14 authorities.
Yeah.
So protecting marine transportation system, doing all the inspections at facilities and on the ships, we're using Title 14 there.
Okay, good. I have another email, and this one is from Bangalore, Maine. No, correction. India. Sorry, misread it. Sorry, my apologies.
Okay, great.
Yeah, Bangalore, India. How does the Coast Guard support Third Nations, if you will? That's the word, and I try not to edit the emails, buddy, so we just take up the best we can. Okay.
No, I understand. Well, like I said, the Coast Guard does a lot of outreach with other nations. Last year, we worked with 51 other nations, training almost 3,000 host country participants. A lot of what we trained them on is law enforcement duties. Mm-hmm. Most countries, Navy, Coast Guard looks closer to the Coast Guard than our U.S. Navy.
I see. Yeah.
So they come to us for a lot of benchmark to do training. So we send a lot of training teams out to these countries to teach how to do fisheries enforcement, how to do search and rescue, how to build up a network and types of good platforms for their area.
Mm-hmm.
We also work with various countries to ensure that their ports are have the right protection and security systems in place. We work, like I said, we're working with a lot of African partnerships, countries in Africa, to teach them how to protect their EEZ. The Coast Guard is very much in part of natural disaster, humanitarian relief natural disaster. In the Caribbean, for an example, during the hurricane season, unfortunately, many of the hurricanes are very destructive, and they have caused a lot of destruction to some of the Caribbean islands.
Right.
So we provide a lot of humanitarian assistance for those countries. When Haiti had that massive earthquake in 2010, it was actually the Coast Guard cutters and forces that were the first ones on scene for the U.S. government providing assistance. Because we have numerous Coast Guard cutters that were on patrol in the Caribbean when that earthquake happened. A lot of our forces went in there to help the Haitians. And it was the Coast Guard that helped get Port-au-Prince, the port there open, so that they can get a lot of humanitarian supplies in there. And then we started working very closely with, like I said, and we're working very closely with the Department of State, USAID, and the Department of Defense in getting humanitarian assistance, disaster relief to those countries. When like I said, the tsunami earthquake happened in Japan. We provided assistance out there, too.
Wow. We have another email. The email is beginning to come in, and we'll take a couple more. And you believe it, we got 15 minutes remaining in the show. You see how fast
it's going? Wow, it's amazing how fast that's going.
I tell you, and you're doing a great job. Thank you, sir. Here's one, and this has to do with maybe you know what you're talking about. Did the Coast Guard give – this is from Nigeria.
We gave them two Coast Guard cutters, and one of them was a former ship that I used to command, the Coast Guard cutter Chase, was decommissioned, and it was given to the Nigerian Navy.
Wow, somebody's on top of her game here.
Yes, and like I said, well, that one I'm very sensitive. Well, not sensitive. I know that one just because that used to be a ship that I commanded several years ago.
I see. And what's that? What's that ship used for? And I think you stated it very clear. A lot of these different countries' navies kind of are similar to our Coast Guard, if you will. So these cutters are used for rescue. What do they use us for?
Like I said, the U.S., we use the cutters for search and rescue, law enforcement, okay. Fisheries enforcement, national defense. Mm-hmm. And it's my understanding, like Nigeria, they're going to use it for the same aspect, to protect their exclusive economic zone, to help mariners in distress, and also just to protect their borders.
Very good. Thank you for the folks who are sending these emails. Good questions. And that one, I had no clue what you were talking about, so I'm glad we had you on the radio. That's what you're here for. You know this stuff. Do we do that quite frequently when we decommission some of these things to make them available for other governments?
Yes, we do. Foreign military sales is common practice. If we have a platform that a lot of times it's a lot cheaper for the other nations, especially ones that don't have as large a budget, to buy an existing platform from the United States, and then they take it back and they'll invest some of their monies to make it specific for the missions that they want, but it's cheaper for them to do it that way than to build from brand new.
Yeah, that's good.
These are proven platforms.
Yeah. I heard you say that a lot of our fleet is about 40 years old.
Yes, that's correct. Many of our cutters, like the Chase, is an older platform. It's built in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our ships are old, over 40 years old, and we need to recapitalize and get new ships. And that's what we're working on right now. We're building a new national security cutters. They're over 400 feet with the latest in technology. We're building what we call our fast response cutters, I believe 150-some feet. I can't remember the exact length, but they're going to be our coastal patrol craft, working within 200 miles, protecting the borders. Like I said, small boats, response mediums. These are 45-foot fast response boats for search and rescue and also homeland security. So, and we are looking at we need to build medium-range cutters, our offshore patrol vessels, to replace our 210-foot and 270-foot medium endurance cutters. So, as well as some of our buoy tenders. Our inland water buoy tenders are really old. Some of them are pushing, I think, over 50 years old. So we need to start rebuilding our fleet so we can continue to serve America.
Do we have any, say, 2012, 13, do you have any new ships coming on board to be commissioned in the near future?
Yes, we do. We have a national security cutter that is going to be coming online here pretty soon. And then we are building a couple more, and we're hoping Congress will support the continued development because we would like to have eight of them. Right now we have two in service. One should be coming online here pretty soon. They're building a fourth. I think we have budget for the fifth, and we're asking for three more. And we hope we gain that support.
That's great. That's good. I would be remiss if I did not bring up in this wonderful resume you have, and I'm going to bring it up because it's a personal interest of mine, and this is the tall ships. You were a watch officer there? What?
The Coast Guard Cutter Eagle is America's tall ship. It's a fully functional ship. It was a world prize from World War II from Germany. And it, like I said, it was renamed the Coast Guard Cutter Eagle. It's birthed and it's home ported in New London, Connecticut, at the Coast Guard Academy. It's used to train our future Coast Guard officers at the academy and also that attend officer candidate school. It's if you ever get the chance to go on board her decks, her teak decks, and see that ship, I encourage everybody. Like I said, it's America's tall ship. It's a beautiful ship, especially when she's under full sail. When I was a junior officer, I had the privilege to sail on many cruises, short cruises along the East Coast, and I was able to get qualified to sail to be a deck watch officer under power and sail. And it's amazing. I mean, it really goes back to the old times when the ship was under full sail, and all of a sudden it's heeled over at maybe 10, 12 degrees under sail, and it's just clipping right along doing about 12 knots, and there's no engine, and it's just quiet, and you're just hearing the ship just kind of slice through the water. The sail's just doing a little flapping. It's like, wow, this is pretty amazing.
It is.
It really is something. It's a beautiful ship. Like you said, America can take a lot of pride in that ship, and I encourage all Americans, when she does happen to sail into your port, to get on board that ship.
I saw her. I used to live in Boston for a period of time, and I got over there, and I stood there with my mouth hanging open. Man, what a beautiful sight.
Yes, it is, and I know... every summer, she does a lot of parade of sail type events through the various big ports.
Yeah.
I don't know what's upcoming this summer. Sometimes she also sails across the Atlantic over into Europe and participates in several big sailing events there this year. And about once a decade, she's able to get on the West Coast.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to look at the calendar for the West Coast. Bring her to Monterey, right?
That's it. Oh, I agree.
Bring her to Monterey.
I'd like to get her up to Alaska, too, sometime.
Yeah, there you go. We have 8 minutes remaining. And what can the American people do to support your mission? I know that's a tough question.
I wouldn't say it's a tough question. Okay. I think America is supporting. Like I indicated, we're locally based. We're in the communities. We're part of that community. Up in Alaska, we like to say we're part of Alaska's DNA. I mean, the Coast Guard was up here, up in Alaska, before Alaska was a state. And we were the enforcement agency up here. We were the rescue agency. A lot of the exploits about driving reindeer and saving whalers, that was from the Coast Guard, our revenue cutters. I was stationed along the West Coast at numerous ports in Coos Bay and Astoria. We're part of that community. And I'd say what we ask is just to continue to support, and we have that from everybody. And I firmly believe a lot of that is because we are part of those communities. Mm-hmm. And I just ask, and a lot of that, it's not just asking for their support. We have to make sure that we are continuing to earn that support and doing what we are expected to do as public servants for America. So it's a two-way street. I mean, our job is to serve America, to protect our nation, like I said, to protect lives, those who use the sea, and to protect the sea itself, to protect the environment. And that's our call for the nation. And I can say the nation, I think, loves their Coast Guard, and I just ask for their continued support on that, and I believe we have that. We're part of those communities, and it's a very rewarding job.
Yeah. Would you allow an old, I'll be careful how I term that, and I'm talking about myself, an old Army ex-Special Forces guy to come and look at your Coast Guard in Alaska one day?
Oh, Jim, I would be happy to host you, and I have an affinity for the Army. My dad was career Army, and his dad before him was career Army. So my grandfather and my dad were both career Army, so I grew up Army. So I would love to show you around. And like you said, I was privileged to be able to attend the Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. So I do have a soft spot for for Army.
good, because I'd love to do that. I'm just so excited, and I want to thank you, and I also want to reach out and publicly thank your POA, Veronica. She did a great job of trying to coordinate. I know I was difficult to get in touch with the past couple of days. I was kind of behind.
Jim, I really appreciate allowing me the opportunity to talk about the Coast Guard. The men and women of the Coast Guard, like I said, they're doing tremendous things for their nation. You see a lot of the exploits on television about the heroic search and rescue, but they're just doing many things beyond that to protect our nation, to protect the environment, and to protect, like I said, any kind of threats that might be emanating from the sea. And they're just doing tremendous stuff. And I'm very just proud to be affiliated with this organization.
Well, I can hear it in your voice, and I appreciate it. And before I bid you good day, I'm going to ask. I know, and I'm not going to. Your wife is an author of children's book, and being an author myself, tell her keep up, author, because that is absolutely a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. So I see it on your bio that she's give her a plug for some of her books.
Well, she's a children's book author. She's got four books in publication. Her recent one, The Crowded Backyard, has won several national awards.
Good.
Recently, a gold medal in the Mom's Choices Awards, and a finalist of USA Awards. I couldn't be more proud of her with her books. Her first book was Jules the Lighthouse Dog, when we lived out in San Diego. Story of one of our dogs at the lighthouse and looking for his what he's going to do in life, and he finds it. And then, like I said, Kid Canine was one of her other books, another story of a dog and what he wants to do and how he finds the power of his smile. And then Just Perfect, another story of a dog who thinks he's the perfect one until he realizes there's various different shapes and sizes of dogs out there, and he learns about diversity and that everybody is perfect. And like I said, The Crowded Backyard, the newest one, is about, like I said, she uses dogs as a theme because that reaches across all genders. And they're not specifically about dogs themselves. It's just that's the type of character she uses to tell her stories. And Just Perfect is about how your attitude it indicates how you view the world. And this is about a little dog who's, like I said, he feels his yard is very crowded and he learns to look at things differently and view the world differently, and all of a sudden it's not a crowded backyard, but it's a full, enriching yard that he just enjoys being in.
Love it. Well, please pass on my admiration. Keep up the good work. And if she ever wants to come on the radio or a television show anyway and talk about those books, she's got a standing invitation.
Love okay, I'll pass that on to her, Jim.
Yeah, good. And I want to thank you again and for taking the time on Saturday to share with our audience by the response that we continue to get. It's been very well received. And I want to thank Heather for facilitating our get-together. And you have been a pleasure, sir. So thank you for your time and your service.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate the opportunity to speak about the Coast Guard. And more importantly, I appreciate the having this opportunity to show the support that you have for the Coast Guard and the support that we're getting from everybody and all your listeners. So thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. And you have a great weekend, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Jim.
My pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, boy, what a pleasure. What a pleasure. We've had Captain Custer, the Chief of Staff for the 17th Guard District, our guest this morning. A huge, huge array of topic, and I could not be happier to be able to share in this message of what the Coast Guard's doing. And once again, I want to say, reach out a special thanks to the Center for Homeland Defense and Security and specifically Heather Izzeron for facilitating this meeting. And Monday, our television show, 1 p.m. Pacific, you can view it live at jlwcos.tv and Comcast, KYMB TV, Comcast Channel 19, every Monday from 1 to 2 Pacific. So, and next week, we'll be back at our regular time. So I want to thank you and everyone have a great day and a great weekend. Until then.
You've been listening to Jim White's Circle of Success Radio. Please visit our website, jlwhiteinternational.com. Join us next time as Jim White brings it all together on Jim White's Circle of Success Radio.
I'd like to be able to come up and maybe do some shows from there as well. So I love what you're doing, and I'm going to see if I can get that on the calendar. You there, buddy? I lost you.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.